I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores.
Stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on.
But we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.
If it doesn't work, you're just not using enough. You're listening to Soft Web Radio, Special Operations Military News, and straight talk with the guys in the community.
Hi, welcome to another episode of Soft Web Radio. I am your host, Rad, and I have a very special guest today, Ben Williams, a former Navy officer in the Surface Warfare Department of the Navy. We'll talk about that. And today he's also the Chief Operating Officer for Exyn Technology, which really dabbles probably with autonomous drones and AI. And that's a very hot topic right now. And we're gonna crack this can open. And for the next hour, you're gonna hear us talk about everything from, you know, what took him into the Navy to why autonomous AI today. So welcome to the show, Ben.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, wonderful to have you. And so surface warfare, can you tell me and my listener what exactly that is? Because I know boats ride on the surface.
Yeah. Tell me. Yeah, so the way to think about it, within the Navy, you generally have the folks that drive the boats or fight the boats. You have the folks that ride on the boats, which is, you know, Marine Corps, we're the taxi drivers. Mm-hmm. And then you have the aviators who fly helicopters and jets and all that sort of thing. So the surface warfare officers generally are the ones who are running the divisions on board the ship, and each of, you know, you stand watch stations for driving or fighting the ship, running the engineering departments, that sort of thing. And then over time, that unrestricted line leads towards command of a ship. So if you stay in long enough, that's how you get to be the commanding officer of a ship or squadron, et cetera.
So if I broke this down like Star Trek, and we got Kirk on the bridge, and Kirk's got to go to the somewhere else, and then he puts, you know, Leonard Nimoy, you know, Spock in charge, and then Spock's got to go with him though, right? So all of a sudden you got the guy on the con, he's like an ensign, he's like now in charge.
Right.
Have you been the guy in charge of the ship?
In a sense, yeah. So the watch station that is in charge of driving the ship at any one time is called the officer of the deck.
Yes,
that's the person who sort of runs the bridge and is charged with navigation and positioning to fight, et cetera. So, yep, that's one of the watch stations you have to qualify for on your first tour as a surface warfare officer.
How awesome is that? That's really cool.
Pretty intense, yeah.
Yeah, that is intense. Now, does surface warfare, just me being me, I think of like the thing called a SeaWiz, and I'm only thinking that's probably like on a lot of ships, right? Because it's anti. Are you in charge of the SeaWiz is like a gun, a Gatling gun of sorts that just like it just fires.
It's some absurd like 2,000 rounds a second or something. It's like a minute. It's a lot.
It's a lot. Correct us. Someone who knows, who runs a SeaWiz, correct us in comments and tell us about the SeaWiz so our listener knows more. Okay, because I know you're out there.
it's pretty wild to see those things go because it's they're rapid articulation, so it like tracks incoming missiles, and it's sort of your last line of defense after, you know, the jets can't shoot it down or your missile defense systems can't shoot it down. It's like the last one, so last 500 yards or something.
That is crazy
intense.
Mm-hmm. It's an intense device on top on the ship. Now, what kind of ships did you maneuver on?
So I was primarily, my first tour was on board a cruiser, Bunker Hill, which was the first of the vertical launch cruisers in the U.S. Navy. And then I ran some small boat teams as part of a VBSS detachment that went up in sort of the northern Persian Gulf and inside the Kar Abdullah waterways, sort of right around the invasion of Iraq. Second time.
So VBSS means vehicle board search and seizure, right? So you were tasked with like attacking boats and searching them, right?
Yeah. Visit board search and seizure.
Visit.
So it was most of it was boarding commercial vessels that were suspected of smuggling or that sort of thing. So, you know, you would, in the typically understated Navy way, the ones where they shoot at you are called non-compliant. So those were, you know, we weren't special forces or anything. So we weren't supposed to really prosecute those. Mm-hmm. If it got really dicey, then we would call the SEALs or call the Aussies or someone else.
But Ben, really, I mean, like, you're wearing like Cyrus plate carriers that are detachable if you go overboard, and you're wearing, you got all the kit, and you do look the part of a potential SEAL.
Totally. Yeah.
Okay. I just want to put that out there for my listener, right? Like, you are decked out in that to the nines. You probably, Do you guys climb the ladders if you have to on the side of a boat to get up there?
Yeah, you have these little telescoping hooks that
so hang cool.
tiny ladders. Yeah, it's pretty. And sometimes you're in like pretty heavy sea state too.
Oh, yeah, right. So like anybody ever fall off between the boat?
Yeah, every now and then. We try and minimize that. But yeah, it'll happen.
Because I mean, I see it on like, you know, social media where like they're maybe taking like a cruise ship captain onto another cruise ship. And you see the seas. The seas are just moving up and down. I can only imagine that's exactly what you're dealing with.
Right. Yeah. Cause in those scenarios, all the ships are trying to make it work.
Right.
And in a boarding, they are not necessarily cooperating with you. So they're not positioning for the best sea state for you.
Oh, wow. And I bet a drone can do a lot of the job that you're doing on a boat without having to deal with seas, right?
That'd be nice.
I mean, really, but you do have to have that human element in there, you know, someone who can speak with someone in there and look at their face.
Yeah. Well, especially in those cases, like this was one of our most important jobs was, apart from just inspecting the ship, was also to interview the ship captains or masters and then the crew. And we would often separate them and, you know, interrogate them, go through the GPS waypoints they might have and all their charts and see what, you know, a lot of times the smugglers would trace their path in pencil on the chart, but then they would erase it and, you know, try and spoof GPS waypoints and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And so if you look really carefully, you can often see where they've erased a previous track, like along the Iranian coast or something. And so, you know, it was a really interesting, you know, not what I thought I would be doing in the Navy, but a very interesting, like, investigative process, right? And so it was super interesting stuff.
I mean, honestly, it's like, water police almost.
Well, I mean, we worked for the Coast Guard.
I was just going to bring that up. Did you ever have Coast Guard tag along with you?
Yeah, absolutely. We worked with a bunch of coalition folks too during when we were doing maritime security up inside the waterways. We worked with a Polish infantry ship that we were forward deployed on because it had very shallow drafts, so it could go up the river. And then we worked with on board one of the Grom units with the Polish special forces. And so very, very frightening people to work with.
I heard the Grom just like to play the piano. And if you know about the Grom, look up the piano and you'll figure out they're just really soothing savages. Okay.
So,
that's cool.
That checks out.
That's really cool that you've got to work, you know, multi task force style missions, Coast Guard. Yeah. I had a Coast Guard friend tell me that he used to ride along on a ship with the Navy. And therefore you have the American Coast Guard on the ship. So they can then approach and, you know.
Yeah. Well, especially for the boarding stuff, like that was, that's what the Coast Guard does, right? Mm-hmm. So they're quite good at it. And they often helped train the Navy teams because a lot of times they would just take folks from ship's company and be like, hey, we got to go board this thing. Anyone have training in this? And I suspect that I got selected to do it mainly because my captain thought I was a meathead. And he's like, hey, Williams, when you jump on some ships.
Go do this. You know you want to.
That's good.
And then come back and take over the con.
That's right, yeah. Don't sleep. Just get out and watch.
Yeah, don't sleep. Just give me some coffee. Real good black stuff that just keeps my hair awake. That's awesome, dude. God, the Navy, bro. Did you get any Navy tattoos? Did you go down that road?
No, I almost did a few times. Yeah. I got sort of end-runned by some of the senior officers that would see me drunk outside of a tattoo shop, and they'd be like, you should go back to the ship.
Yeah. You know, your blood's too thin right now on alcohol. Let's get you back.
That's right.
I mean, I always thought if I was in the Navy and I ever crossed the equator, I would get the tattoo of the equator, you know, that they do. And like, if you ever come back to port, you get like the starlings or the birds that always, they always fly back. They always come back.
Right.
And so that's why the pirates have those tattooed is a sparrow, starling, you know.
Yeah.
All the Navy lore, dude, is so cool. And the fact that I work for a Navy guy for Soft Rep, right? Brandon Webb, former Navy SEAL. I hear all sorts of Navy stuff in his books, and I'm just like, it's all in my head, right? Sea Wiz, there's the Sea Wiz right there from a Cold Fear, no, Steel Fear, his book Steel Fear about aircraft carrier. Shameless plug for Steel Fear.
There you go.
Now, I touched base on it at the beginning of our conversation in the intro that you're into, you know, autonomous electronics and engineering, and we'll call it that's what it kind of is until it builds into an aircraft to be a drone, and et cetera, et cetera. And AI, artificial intelligence, what moved you from going from VBSS, you know, visiting board search and seizure, possible captain of a ship, to out? What made you get out and then say, I want to focus on this lane now?
Mm-hmm. So I think a big piece of it for me was that I really enjoyed a lot of what I did in the Navy, but it was tough being away from home almost nonstop for like 6 years, right? So I missed all my family Thanksgivings and, you know, a lot of holidays and stuff. And so I think part of it was getting the, like, to get out was just like, I needed a break and I needed to kind of reset and think about what, you know, what my priorities would be. Mm-hmm. And so coming out, then I started to really think about what I had learned. Being a junior officer in a lot of ways is learning the difference between positional authority and influence. And the idea that, like, technically all of those senior enlisted folks that reported to me had to follow orders that I gave. But if I just gave them orders, then everything fails. I need to be depending on them to teach me, to guide me, to help me make the best decision. And then in turn, I need to spend the time to synthesize as much of these inputs quickly to make a decent decision, and then learn how to correct that decision if I find out that it's not the right one. And so I think when I went into the civilian world, I learned pretty quickly that that isn't really a discipline that's taught very well, especially in corporations where, you know, leadership is often more about transmit versus receive. You're not really listening as well. And a lot of people focus on like individual progression rather than how is my group, my team, my company doing. And for me, the opportunity then to create some of that culture or recreate some of that culture in small companies became more and more important. So, you know, I landed at Lockheed, which was fine and a good place to land for former military. You know, my boss there was a former captain of a cruiser. And so he knew exactly what I was going through and was able to often call me out and be like, you can't do that. That's a Navy thing. We're out. We have to do it differently. Yeah. Fair enough. Thank you, sir.
You don't have to do that anymore either. Thank you, sir. It's over.
Come on, right. Yeah, exactly.
No,
yeah,
but it's still respect. Like before we were talking, you know, there's still that respect. Yes, sir.
So then I got more into the sort of innovative world, the, you know, tech startup category.
Sure.
Even within Lockheed, I was able to help build out this sort of innovation engine where we were commercializing core science, mostly in the energy world, synthetic fuels and marine hydrokinetics and solar power and all kinds of interesting stuff that the military is trying to figure out, because that's going to be a big piece of global policy in the next 100 years. And so that was super interesting. And that got me into this sort of innovation ecosystem. And since then, I've been, you know, building tech companies for the last, I don't know, 15 years. Uh-huh. And I've had a few misses and a few successes and been able to build some really cool stuff.
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores.
Stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course. The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on.
But we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.
So going in the military, let's revert back to your getting your commission, okay? You have to have a degree, right? What's your degree focused? What is that?
I was a very complicated college guy because I was computer engineering with minors in English, mathematics, naval science, and the history and sociology of science. Because I just sort of have ADHD and I can't quite focus. So I studied a lot of really cool stuff, read a ton of fascinating books. And a lot of those actually do sort of guide me towards, you know, where I am today. But I've always been a big believer in just being curious about things. I want to understand things. I think that's been a big help for, you know, changing industries and changing careers and, you know, growing my own capabilities, as well as, you know, learning about the people that work for me and trying to help them be the best version of themselves as well.
boy, maybe you just hit the nail on the head by, I'm not sure if you were just kind of like, you know, jokingly about ADHD, but having ADHD would help you to be able to adjust to multiple different things.
Yeah.
Right. Totally. I call it RADD, which is Rad Attention Deficit Disorder. Okay.
Yep.
I fully have that. Do you really though have ADHD, or is that just the thing?
I don't really know. I've never been like tested for it, but it's some of the general characteristics I do exhibit, but no, I don't know if
I think we all do. I was just wondering, you know, because I want to let people out there know that may have it as well, that, you know, success is available. You know, it's not just you know, like, oh, I got this tag on me, you know. It's like every veteran has PTSD tagged on them, but they do. Right. It's just what it is. My friend who's lost his legs has to realize that he can't do everything because he can do whatever he can today. It's just a hard, it's a hard fact. And I just want people to know there's still success, even if if you're thinking, oh, you know, they diagnosed me or something, but, but again, so with AI and getting into autonomous drones, you're like, okay, I'm at Lockheed now, and Lockheed Martin makes all sorts of, like, you know, Iron Man equipment for, you know, the military that we're all familiar with. They compete against others like Boeing and, you know, BAE. So not that I know these things. So you get out of Lockheed, right? Are you out of Lockheed now? And now you're running your company.
Yep.
And your focus is on what?
So XM Technologies is focused on the intersection between autonomous navigation for robots and unmanned systems, and the intersection of high accuracy mapping, creating three-dimensional models and maps of unknown or difficult to access environments. So our commercial work often ends up focusing on heavy industry, so underground mining or critical infrastructure. Those are industries where there are a lot of areas that are very dangerous or, you know, difficult to access for people. And you want to try and remove people from the most dangerous parts of those industries. And so robotics is the right thing to use in those scenarios, right? Because you're keeping people safer. You're getting better information. You're automating things that in other cases, you know, you're depending on people doing repetitious things successfully, which is not really what we're best at. And so you're targeting the right technologies for those kind of solutions. And the same is true in the government world as well, where, you know, we're putting these systems into difficult or dangerous environments, and we're trying to automate processes that, you know, are not best done by people anyway. And so it's trying to give the warfighter an opportunity to expand their view of the battlefield or better knowledge of the environment before they go in, or, you know, there's a bunch of different use cases for it.
Right. And it's a very cool world to try to Rubik's Cube. You know, you're sitting here trying to put it all together. I have another friend of mine that's working with super sensitive sensors for mine operations to detect human movement.
Yeah.
Subtle, so they can find if there's like a collapse on top of the mine or whatever.
Interesting.
So it's a Dark Pulse is the name of the company, but they do lasers. I mean, like, it's so, it's just like, who's thinking of this? You know, like, I'm sitting here thinking like, I got to make a million, you know, how am I going to make a million? You know, I got to retail myself, but someone's like, no, man, just make this little sensor and just solder this little wire here. And then just like program this chip and boom, we can find life underground.
It's wild. That's one of the cool things about working at the company, right? Because I'm not the inventor of it. I'm not even a founder here, but I joined basically to commercialize it, take it from research to you know, to actualization. And so a lot of the early technical hires are, you know, PhD experts, you know, world unique experts in autonomy and mapping and, you know, motion planning and all this wild stuff. And so it's really cool to be able to kind of extract interesting information from them and, you know, try and use it to apply to build the product.
Yeah, exactly. And so what do you see your product, you know, let's say helping, okay? Because we always know there's two sides to everything. So how's your product, how's your company foresee, you know, the humanitarian effort?
So, I mean, the biggest area is literally just keeping people out of dangerous places. So whether that's in the mine near the explosives that you're setting off to, you know, pull people out or pull the ore out of a mine, or you're saying, I need to understand what the next 10 city blocks looks like in a combat zone. I don't really want to just send people in. I'd like to get a picture there first. All of those scenarios involve allowing a robot to give you information that you would otherwise have to get, you know, with your eyeballs. And so trying to remove people from the most dangerous parts of their jobs is a great reason right. to be doing anything.
And
I think, yeah. And I think, you know, it's a good first start. And in our world, it's rare to have a product where people will buy only because of, you know, humanitarian benefit.
Right.
But because we're also delivering that with, you know, better and more efficient operations, and you can quantify a lot of the like the return on investment as well. So we get to have this sort of dual outcome, which is kind of unique.
Yeah, I think I would like to put out there AI being for more humanitarian efforts, you know, because right now I don't really like to date my podcast and talk about what day it is because I want it to be always like. But right now in the world we're living in, you know, 2023, mm-hmm. there's a huge demand to pause AI development, you know, led by Elon and, you know, Horowitz from IBM and Apple. And these guys are like, we should pause. For the cause and quit developing. Well, what's 6 months going to do? You know, are these brains going to stop really developing? I mean, are they going to stop sleeping at night thinking about codes and quantum physics and like, hey, you know, if I just were to move this chess piece here, but I got 3 months left to do that. You think, what's your thoughts? Is your company listening to this chatter going on about AI and autonomous?
So the categories of AI are a little bit amorphous, but when they're talking about the AI pausing, that concept is basically applying these large language models or language learning models to interfaces that then can emulate people, like a chat interface, right?
I see.
And so the worry there is that then gets too close to an indistinguishable AI from a human interaction. And that's where it gets super dicey, because it then people start to treat them like people and treat the what is said in a chat interface by an AI as something that a person says to them.
Right.
And then if you take action on that, then that gets super dicey, because you can basically automate misinformation, or if there's biases built into the language model, then those just get multiplied a millionfold in these interactions. And so, you know, it's not like interacting with a human is without fault either, but problems become problems much faster and much more universally with something that's like a central AI. Mm-hmm. And so we're in a different category of AI, where we're not doing language learning models that are trying to interact with people as if they were another person.
Yeah. You're not making Terminators.
No. We're trying to basically allow a person to set a high level objective, mm-hmm. and then the robot will self plan its flight path or how to position in a space and create these models and that sort of thing. So, you know, we're focusing on autonomous navigation and autonomous path planning and like decision making around how to accomplish a mission.
Very cool. Almost like throw it up in the air, have a beacon on your wrist, and then it can come back to you once it does its 5 minute spin around the area of operation, right? That's kind of the thought process in my head from what you just explained.
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely a use case, right? There's a lot of fascinating things that, you know, and probably the coolest part about this tech is we aren't going to think of all the best use cases. Mm-hmm. Once we build it and we take it out to market and we put it in front of the operators or the miners or whoever, you know, they'll be like, hey, that's pretty cool. You know what else we could do? And then immediately go off on something we've never thought of, because, you know, we're not the
experts. It's your own R2-D2, bro. It's like you could have your own R2.
Right.
If you had a little wrist communicator that he just tracked to, it's like flying around your shoulder. You're like, R2, what's it look like at the ski resort today? Up he goes. Down back he comes. You got your info. To jokingly segue into that, right, am I thinking, can you make something that would follow like a snowboarder as they rode, so they didn't have to hold like a GoPro or like their any of their helmet cams? You could have this thing kind of filming you like a film crew, like we're used to seeing on movies. Is that something you guys are dabbling? Can you make me something?
So, I mean, that is actually a commercially available product. Skydio makes a sports drone that follows you. I don't know how it would do on a ski slope, but, you know, I've seen people use it for mountain biking.
Sure, that's the same speeds. Sure.
Yeah.
Just lots of turns and, you know, like nice and easy. If you're going to bomb it doing 60, I don't know, keep up. Just nice and easy.
But that is like part of the broader autonomous drone industry. Like that is an absolute use case that is utilized. Yeah. So I check it out. Skydio's got some pretty good
I will check that out. And I was just hoping that maybe you guys could put a little something smaller out there, maybe a little like a wasp that just sits on my shoulder and flies away. You know, it's like,
well, we're not quite there yet, but maybe someday.
It's got to be something sensitive that no one wants to smack, though, like a butterfly.
That's right. Yeah, that'd be a better one. Yeah,
everyone wants to hit the wasp, you know. So it's like, geez, then we're diving into the game Call of Duty because they use a wasp in that. That's probably where I'm getting my thoughts from, bro.
There you go.
Got to fly into a conference room to check the mission out, and you're a wasp, and so it's relaying everything back to the player, and you're the wasp. So you fly, you fly around the people, and they're swatting at you.
Perfect.
Oh yeah, I'm sure my listener knows that's Black Ops 2, the Atlas Corporation scene.
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores.
Stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on,
but we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.
Now, what do you see, you know, the military picking up from you on this? You know, they want some robots.
Yeah. So, I mean, we've got some really interesting projects going now that focus a lot around like combat engineers and how they, you know, need to do rapid scans of areas to build bases or fortifications or like figure out if a particular road or bridge is safe for a convoy or transit or whatever. So a lot of use cases there where it's really important to get fast, accurate data of an environment.
Yes.
There's also the idea of like, if you are trying to avoid putting people through a choke point, where which is convoys often, right? Those are some of the most of the casualties we had in Afghanistan, for instance, I think actually came from convoys. And so if you can then avoid having a pre-planned choke point and instead have a whole bunch of autonomous ground vehicles that are just sort of wandering through the fields or the forest or whatever, that's not predictable. That's harder to tackle. It's not manned in the first place. So you're keeping your soldiers and sailors and airmen off of the, off of that front line and trying to resupply autonomously. You know, that becomes a huge benefit and it makes logistics more viable and less dangerous and, you know, all the things that are really important for an operating force.
You know, so, it's true. Life is precious, right? And throwing people into harm's way like World War One has kind of changed, right? Yeah. We don't have to really be so trench to trench, bayonet to bayonet. Today, it's way more strategic. And I honestly hate to hear about clashes, you know, with other countries and ourselves. But if it's going to be, you know, fighter jets crashing into a drone and trying to knock it into the Black Sea, then I'm happy it's a drone. Okay. Yeah. So, and if they want to try to recover the drone, it's not, they're trying to recover the pilot and the drone, right? Cause so there are these safety factors to it. And with more and more of this technology coming out for the mining industry, right? That's a real big deal because where do we get like all of our stuff from the earth?
Yeah. 100%.
100%. Everything you're looking at is from the earth.
Right. And that's, it's like, it's interesting because it's not that sexy an industry, but it is so fundamental to the entire supply chain, right? So it's not like we're going to stop mining. We may as well do it better and safer and try and, you know, improve it.
And be productive and efficient and, you know, just get to the point. If we need ore and we need ore, then, you know, if we can send in robotics and artificial intelligence to go in and do a lot of that. And maybe there's like three guys working with it versus 30 guys working with it, you know, and perhaps the robots have like safety devices on them as well that like anybody in the ground can get to them. And there's like a first aid kit built on them and like an avalanche bag that blows up in case it's, you know, needs to make an air pocket, you know, things like that. I can see that that's like kind of humanitarian. Maybe it's got some Cheez-It crackers.
There you go. Most important.
I just say, you know, a little convenience, you know, if it's a robot, it's got to haul something for me.
That's right.
Okay. Come on, R2. Make me an ice cream. You're a machine.
I'll put those in our next packs. We'll have Oreos and
please making a we won't say that brand, but making us a nice little shake or something. Now that's very humanitarian. Now what do you see is launching? Do you guys have any projects that the civilian world can know about? Is there something out there that we can look up and say, oh wow, this is who I just listened to on the podcast, and this is his product.
So we are in the process of releasing our next generation drone system, which is the Exyn Aero. And we're partnering with a company called Easy Aerial, which is an American drone manufacturer. And this is going to be one of our first blue certified drone systems, which is a classification that the government uses to say, yes, we've evaluated the cybersecurity risks and supply chain stuff, and it's we're willing to buy it.
So, yes, right.
So it's pretty exciting that we're able to put this out in market and got a lot of interest from both government and commercial for the system. So it's pretty exciting.
I'd imagine. And if they're in that industry, they need something like this. This is the place to look it up. You've got some credentials and pedigree to go along with it, which is why I kind of said, what was your degree? You know, you're going after the engineering aspect, and the military has led you down a path of just a whole different bunch of ladders you had to climb to learn how to say, yes, sir. My dad taught me this. He's like, no matter what, Aaron, you either have to salute the rank or you have to salute the man. Either way, you got to salute.
Yep.
Okay. So you just got to swallow that pill. Okay. Yeah. So no matter what, just salute it. You got to respect that. Yep. So let the rank, you bring that to your team. You know, I'm sure you guys aren't out there just looking for veterans to hire and things along those lines. But if someone was listening and they're like, hey, I also have a degree in, and I can't stop sleeping at night and I write pads of paper and formulas, can they reach out to you and submit a resume?
Yeah, absolutely. We hire pretty regularly out of the veteran community. Mm-hmm. One of the first things I started doing in the tech world was coaching and mentoring folks that were transitioning out of the military. Because it wasn't super easy for me. It wasn't terrible, but I learned a lot about how to transition well over that first year. And so trying to help other folks figure out how to learn the new acronyms or forget the old acronyms,
right,
and take the basics of what you were doing and translate it. Because I'm sure a lot of the folks you talk to probably resonate with the idea that, especially let's say you're like a rifleman in the Marine Corps or the Army or something, like what you do in the Army and Marine Corps is not just carry and shoot a rifle. There's a lot of other stuff that goes into it. You do maintenance, you do leadership,
you drive a car,
all kinds of stuff, right?
Yeah, all sorts of stuff. Yeah. Right.
So when you're thinking about a civilian job, it's important not to just to get quickly beyond the fact that they might go, well, I don't, we're an accounting company. Why do I need someone to carry a rifle? And you're like, that's like 2%.
And that guy immediately goes to like a law enforcement job and submits to resume. Right. Like, I want to be law enforcement. They're like, you're too hands-on. You're a Marine. You don't understand. But they don't. And sometimes you don't because you're taught, and this is the way it is. And, you're taught to answer with the word kill. You're taught that as a yes.
Yeah.
And you get out. It's like, we don't really reply that way in a civilian world unless you wind up in a corporate environment where there's guys that might be like you or me who are like, oh, I get you.
Yeah.
Right. You want to eat a baby. Yeah. I understand that, it's okay. You're hungry. It's lunchtime. Yeah. I got you. I think that makes us smile to know there's folks out there like ourselves that are looking. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've got veterans that were hired veterans for me at my shops and, I hear them talking all sorts of acronyms still.
Yeah, totally. I mean, well, we all do it, right? Like, I still get together with some of my buddies from VBSS time and like throw around the old acronyms, but it's helpful to know context, right?
That's right.
It's helpful to be able to like have that as an outlet or a way to remember and sort of celebrate the things you've done.
Well, I knew what you were saying when you said VBSS, right? That acronym,
right?
I don't do that, but I know that, and I know an idea of what it is, and that's all it takes.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, oh, damn, Rad, what VBSS? What do you mean, Martine? What do you mean, Cyrus plate removal release handle on my rig? What do you know about side sappy swimmer plates? What are you talking about? What are you talking about, Rad? What flotation device in my kit?
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
It's very specific stuff.
Eagle Industries? What? Why? LBT? I don't understand, Rad. I don't understand. No. War games. It's all about war games, right? So I do that. I do that out here. I haven't really explained that a little bit to you. My listeners probably hear it on a lot of my shows, but I do airsoft war games on a large scale. And we have guys like yourself or guys who could never get into the military because of maybe an eye issue when they were like premature when they were born.
Right.
And so they could never get in, but they're Captain America's heart. They should be in.
Right.
You look around, you think about guys that got in, and you're like, how'd you get here?
Sometimes,
that guy, the kid I'm talking about should be that guy, okay? Because he has asthma, he wants to be there. So, So if you're that kid out there that wants to, you know, get involved and you want to play some war games, look me up on Instagram or wherever that's at. And if you want to submit your resume and you have an engineering or you have AI dreams, you hit up Exyn Technologies. Let me just spell that. It's E-X-Y-N, right?
That's right. Yep. Okay. E-X-Y-N.
And Technologies. I'm going to let you spell that and the rest of you out there. Comment down below how you think it should be spelled. That's awesome. Yeah. That's awesome.
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores.
Stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on.
But we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.
So what are you doing to keep your sanity aside from, you know, the Navy and the AI? Is there something that you're doing? What are you doing? What are you up to?
Well, right now it's mostly my my 3 and 5 year old taking up my time. But previous to that, you know, played rugby for 10 years when I was finishing up the Navy and as I was jumping down the civilian world. Mm-hmm. And that was a real great group of guys across a few teams and, you know, helped keep me grounded too because
rugby's dope. So when you have the ball, when you have the rugby – what's it called?
It's a ball.
Okay. Ball. So you have the rugby ball, and you see them, and they're running, and they're just stiff arming somebody, mm-hmm. but then they dive into the end zone.
Yeah.
Do you have to dive?
You don't have to dive, but you have to touch the ball on the ground. So like in American football, you just have to cross the plane.
Yeah.
In rugby, you have to touch the ball to the ground under control.
And so that's probably – and so it also probably protects it when it's within you. Mm-hmm. And then as you're going down like that, you're like, I'm going in for – is it a touchdown in rugby?
It's a try. It's called a try.
Okay, so you're going in and you're getting a try. Mm-hmm. So it's better just to protect the ball and just dive on it, huh?
Yeah, but you have to. The ball has to touch. You can't protect it so it doesn't touch the ground because then it doesn't count.
So is the ref watching that whole situation just like to see?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah,
I like sports. I do love sports. I promise. Baseball was my game, but I feel like 6'5", I could probably play a little rugby.
Absolutely, yeah.
Wasn't really a soccer player though, but I mean, is there a goalie
in rugby? Yeah. No, the teaming looks a lot like American football, mm-hmm. except that you don't have stoppages in the same way. So, like, if you get tackled, you just have to roll over and put the ball back, and then your teammates immediately try and get it. So it's like a very continuous game. It's exhausting.
Whereas in football, they bring out the yardage line and they put it on their thing say, "Okay, first down." It's like you guys are just battling over the objective, the package, the ball, to just get a try.
Right.
Until you do.
Yep. Or until it turns over, and then they try and go the other way.
What's a timeout going to be called for? Just like
If it goes out of bounds, then you'll start what's called a set piece, which is kind of like a soccer throw-in, you know, a line out. Or if you have penalties, sometimes they'll do a stoppage and restart. But in general, you have a much more fluid game than like standard American football.
I'm down.
Sort of like between soccer and football.
I'm down. Oh yeah, my wife wants to get me into pickleball, but I think we're gonna go for rugby.
I love rugby. I mean, it's as much a social thing as it is a sports thing. I love the sport itself, but the camaraderie and the community around rugby is really, really good. It's not maybe for everyone, but like after most of the matches, you will go to a social where the teams get together, tell stories, tease each other, and like. It's a real brotherhood about it. It's really awesome.
I love that. And do you have any teams you want to give a shout out to that you played for?
Yeah, Schuylkill River Exiles from Philadelphia and Virginia Beach Falcons were the two teams I played for.
That's awesome. That's way awesome. And I love that. And I read something about you where you were 40 under 40. Is that for Forbes?
That was for the Wharton, Wharton Business School.
Yeah, of course.
And so Wharton Magazine did a 40 under 40 for their alumni. And that was I got in there with one of my co-founders from one of my last companies, which was a marketing automation startup that basically tried to simplify the process of identifying content influencers on like YouTube or Instagram and then getting them branded deals. So doing dynamic pricing for a platform, which was super interesting. I didn't know anything about marketing beforehand, so it was fun to sort of dive headfirst into a completely new industry, and also taught me a lot about the mechanics of how money flows in the content world, which, I mean, it's probably something you deal with, I'm sure.
Well, I just want you to know that I'm not paid by like anyone other than SoftRep. Yeah. You know, I take care of SoftRep, they take care of me, but other than that, I don't, no one holds any master of puppets over me per se, except for Brandon Webb. I got to give him that. Okay. In all fairness, right? He also lets me be my own master. So with that, I mean, I have been offered. Okay. Mm-hmm. I have had people approach me, and it's almost a political situation. Yeah. And I'm just like, you know, if I took your sponsorship and wore all this gear, people would think I care.
Yeah.
You know, even though it seems like you want something for free, everybody wants this, you know, especially like in the snowboard world or in the ski or skateboard or BMX or motocross or whatever extreme, everybody wants a sponsor. Everybody wants somebody to sponsor them and like pay them and do what they love. Pay me to do what I love. So sometimes you can get kind of screwed over on a social influencer because they may not, you may think that they were good, but they don't, they're just pushing something on you. Right.
Right. And that's like part of the fundamental problem of that market. You know, it's really hard to try and balance that authenticity. And for some of those folks, they still got to get paid.
But. Well, and if you think about it today, right. And I'm not going to mention these people's names, but there's a crypto company that just crashed heavily. Okay. Yep. All right. And there's a lot of heavy influential sports stars and actors who are like, hey, you should have this. You should use this. You should tag. Yeah. I use it. Hey, they were paid behind the scenes to influence us to invest in this company that just crashed.
Yep.
And so now crashed they're all being held on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's dicey. Like, and that's a risk for that person too, right? Because their really reputation is partially on the line.
But what they thought the first was like, oh, your agent says, hey, here's a six-figure check. Because they got paid, I think, like, anywhere from like $140,000 to $180,000 a pitch.
Oh,
like
I'm sure.
Because there was, we know who we're talking about then. Dude, bro, they got some lifestyles to pay for on that situation.
I know.
And holy cannoli. Jeez Louise. Yep. So again, I like to have this, you know, you might hear, because we're teamed up with like iHeartRadio, you might hear every now and then like a nicotine ad. And I'm like, why? I'm talking to veterans about like cutting out like, you know, problems and you can have a smoke. But then all of a sudden it's like, do you need a whiskey shot? And I'm like, guys, can we just like, can our sponsors not be whiskey and cigarettes, please? Like, like the commercial break in between the podcast. Mm-hmm. But and no offense, iHeart, I love you. Thank you. But I mean, can we get some least some like, you know, I don't know, Neutrogena on here or something, you know?
some
hair care products maybe. I don't know why, but I mean, hello. Because after you get out of the military, you kind of stop shaving and cutting your hair every single day.
100%. I mean, even during leave in the military, it was like, it was just a known thing. You just do not shave. You let a beard out and like, you know, and especially, I don't know, I think it's different for different branches, but like when I was on deployment, I had to shave twice a day because the gas mask seal wouldn't seal right if you had too much stubble or a beard. And so, you know, mustaches were fine, but like you gotta shave on the sides. And so that was like years of that. I was like, I'm ready for a beard.
Yeah, right. I mean, like, look what happened, you know.
Yeah, it's
like,
exactly.
I was dry shaving at a Foot Locker, you know, just like making sure. My instructor came up to me. He's like, did you shave today, Radel? I was like, yes. He's like, you sure about that? And I was like, oh, he's going to make me go shave again, dude. I got the Homer Simpson going on or something. It's you shave once, it's just right back. So, you know, it's all good times, all fun times. Shaving every day, man. Also, if you're a razor company and you want to put on here, try to give me a shave.
There you go.
Let's do something for charity. Hit me up. Mm-hmm. I'm open. Absolutely. It doesn't make me. I make it. So let's go. Razor company. Well, listen, I really enjoyed this conversation. It's been really fun going back and forth and getting to know you and talking about everything. Ben, is there anything you want to like just drop on us real quick before we kind of wrap things up here?
Just listen to people around you. I think that's the source of all of my like company problems have always been bad communication. Source of most of the personal problems I've ever had, bad communication. So sit and listen to each other. Try and understand.
Really good advice, and I'll take that to heart as well. And I also like to say compromise is always a good thing, and hear both sides of the story, and then just even if you're in charge, just listen because you might just be like, oh, you're right. I was wrong. You were right. Like that person was right. I've had that just the other day. As a matter of fact, someone was trying to return a product to me. It's a red dot optic for a gun. And I have a no return policy for electronics. And I'm like, what'd you do? Did you try to adjust the height and elevation on it? Did you do something to it? Did you, And then he's like, no. almost to tears. And I don't mean to make that. I just am pretty tall and intimidating. Yeah. So I stepped back and I said, hold on, let me get a new one. And I grabbed a new one out and I grabbed his and I side by sided him. I was like, what's wrong with it? He's like, it's in the dark. If you go in the dark room, the light goes away. The red dot goes away. I'm like, what? We have to have a red dot for low light. This is for low light. You're tripping me. I wasn't listening to him.
Yeah.
I wasn't. I was insulting him. And I realized it and I stopped and I listened to him and it was doing what he said. And I pulled all of those off my shelf at my one store. I called my buddy and I said, pull them all off the other shelf. They're doing this exact thing. And he's like, that's lame. I was like, it's like, but that's a lot of product. And I, and then I apologized to my customer and Kyle, I know it's you and you know it's you, Kyle. And I'm sorry that I came at you, bro. And thanks for having a conversation. If you listen to this, but it got handled out. But again, I was very just like, I'm right. You're wrong. Thanks for that. Thanks for pulling that out of me. I appreciate your advice on that. So, and again, listening to each other is a good thing. So thank you.
Of course. Yeah. And I appreciate you taking the time here. It's been really fun.
Well, yeah. And I hope that my listener goes and checks out XN Technology and learns about what you have to offer. You know, if you are interested in learning about rugby, send him an email.
There you go. Come join up.
Well, Ben, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show today. And I want to thank again, Brandon Webb, for always believing in me to take the microphone and interview gentlemen of your stature. And, you know, I mean, you're right up there. Wait till you see it go up on the website. And you're like, okay, here I am right there.
Very exciting.
All right. And thanks to, let's see, who brought you here to me? Was it, it wasn't Macy Taya. It was, Lily, right?
I think that might be right.
Yeah. I'm going to say Lily. I said four different names, but Lily, I think, is the one. So thanks, Lily, for the correspondence. And, you know, we'll keep you around. And if we need to have you back on and talk more about your AI, I'd love to have you on as a repeat. No problem.
That's great. Much appreciated.
Well, this is Rad saying thank you on behalf of Ben and Soft Rep Radio. And don't forget to go check out our merch store. We got merch. I know you like to buy it. Go check it out. Support us. We totally appreciate it. And again, iHeartRadio, I love you. Thank you very much for sponsoring us. There's my heart mug to keep it real. Okay. All right. And again, thanks to Ben for being on the show. And this is Rad saying peace.
You've been listening to Soft Rep Radio.
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores.
Stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on.
But we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.